Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's good, Fatherhood? I'm James Lopez, and welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast. Today, I'm getting greedy. My son started a YouTube series, and I want to take him to the next level. So I asked my homie of over 6 years, Lamar Tyler, to come through and drop some gems. What's good, Lamar? How you feeling?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you for being here. You know, I'm honored, man. We have a lot of good business discussions ever since our masterminds. So I can't wait to do this now. Have some fun.
I agree, man.
Yeah, yeah. So how many kids do you got, Lamar?
We have four. Me and my wife, we got a blended family. She had two kids when we met, and then we had two more. So we got four kids all together, ranging from 26 to 10 years old.
Wow. And the last three are girls, right?
Yep. Yeah. Oldest is a boy. Youngest three are girls. Correct.
Wow. So you started Black and Married with Kids as a blog, but now you turned that into like a business empire. I mean, you were even on Ebony Magazine's Power 100 list next to Barack Obama, his wife, Beyonce, Jay-Z, and more. How does it feel showing that to your oldest child?
They don't care.
Come what? On, these are kids. They don't. What? Get out of here. So when you show them this list and you tell them, yo, dad is a G, man, he gets down, they just look at it like, nah, don't really matter?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I think all the stuff is impressive to me. I mean, you know, if it was my parents, I think I'd be, you know, they on to something. Actually, my parents, I think they were on to something. B, I'd be thinking, man, I want to listen. I just want to just get close. Let me nestle in and just listen to everything they say so I can use these strategies to catapult myself to success. But that is not how any of this works.
Wait, you serious, man? Like, I was about to ask you, like, how does it feel having all of that knowledge at their disposal? Like, they must take advantage of it, and you're telling me no?
Can we be real?
Yeah,
Our fatherhood is lit. Yeah. All right, this is what I found, and I talk to a lot of other parents, and, you know, everybody's different, right? Mm-hmm. But I want to keep it real with you. I talk to a lot of other parents, and I had this conversation just last week. When I was younger, before I had kids, one of the main things I thought about me being a parent is the ability to transfer information.
Yep.
And I said, wow, so all these things that I had to learn on my own, all these things that I had to pick up piece by piece, lesson by lesson. You know, I had to read all these books to gain this knowledge because I didn't have, you know, certain types of people in my life that could just share it or give it to me or whatever that may be. So I said, when I'm a father, my kids will be infinitely ahead of the curve because I'll just give them everything that took me 25, 30 years to learn. Right.
Yeah.
And I'll just transfer them and they'll just, you know, jump to the front of the pack.
Yeah.
What I quickly learn as your kids get older, and especially once they become teens, right? Everything all good until they become teenagers, James.
Yeah. Once they
become teens, your kids don't care. Overall, in general, right? Like some of you may have kids that do, but yeah, man, they don't listen. Now, the good thing I can tell you is because we have, all right, like young adults now, is during that teenage years where you think, okay, I'm going to dump all this into them and they go on catapult and do all these things, right? And they trip out for a little bit. They do come back. They do come back around. So around, you know, the end of high school, before they get out of high school, they start returning back to their natural selves. I guess the hormones start to calm down. They start to listen a little bit. And then I think they start to actually begin to really take in all that stuff that you shared over the years.
Mm.
But when you really want them to take it in, when they 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, it's a tough battle, man. I'm just being real. It's a tough battle.
I believe you. Because I look at my son now and, you know, he was around while I was doing the fat startup stuff, and he was around some of the events, and I don't even think he cared. I was like, you know, who's this Gary Vaynerchuk? Who's that guy?
Right, exactly. You know, yeah. We tell them all the time, like, hey, we doing these TV interviews. We on TV. Like, they've been on TV. They didn't care when they were on TV, right?
Yeah.
We have to tell them, like, hey, you know, don't have no attitude. Fix your face. This is today's show here in the living room, right? Like you won't be broadcast in front of millions across the globe with a scowl on your face. Yeah. Like, let's get all this straightened out, man. But, hey, that is what fatherhood, that's what parenthood is. Going through those times, going through the bad times, the good times, the times in the middle, right? And trying to make something out of it all.
So have you ever done a show where your kids got paid? Like, as a young talent? I forgot what it was called. Like, as a child talent?
We have not done stuff specifically where they got paid alone. Now, we have done a lot of different over the years, social media influencer campaigns. We work with a lot of America's largest brands, right? Done a lot of media and press. And we've done things where, hey, you know, they would want us and the family to come down and do different things. And maybe we go to Disney and shoot some videos and shoot some commercials and do different things. Or we did some stuff with Visit Orlando, right? Mm-hmm. We went around all these different attractions. And, you know, we've done different things over the years where we would get paid. We just set the price and got paid overall. But it was never anything where they specifically got paid just themselves.
And then did you tell your kids this is how much money we're going to make off of this campaign and you guys are going to get X amount of dollars?
No, for that we didn't. What okay. It was is we said, hey, y'all getting dinner tonight, James. Y'all getting dinner. You getting dinner. We're going to help you get to something called college when you get out of school.
See, my 12-year-old would have been all over that, man. He would have been like, Dad, wait, you're getting what? All right, well, you know, I should get 10% or I could just get this new accessory for my iPhone. And
there you go. Right? Hey, you know, what they got is they got an amazing trip. They got an amazing experience. But what I will say is, you know, you talked about your son with the YouTube and doing these different things. There are a lot of opportunities right now for influencers, all yeah. ages, size, shapes, colors, no matter what it is. Right. Influencers, people that can build audience online to be able to basically monetize that by having companies, brands, agencies pay you for access to the audience that you built.
Yep, yep.
And what I can say is by being influencers, our children, man, have lived a life that my wife and I never lived.
Mm-hmm. But how do you explain that to them though? Like they ever said, you know, even though they might not be impressed by the things that you guys did, right? Did they ever come to you and say, I want the things that you guys accomplished?
I don't know. As an influencer? They don't. You know what? And I'll tell you why. Because I don't think overall children view it like that. Mm-hmm. Because the things that you've accomplished are what they live with every day, James.
Yeah.
So it's a difference. Because, of course, my wife and I, we're having conversations about we didn't have access to this and access to that. So we just appreciate it to an entirely different level. Yeah. With them, this is how they've grown up. This is what they've seen. Yeah. They don't really know what it's like to go to Disney and stand in line. Because most of the time we went to Disney as influencers, we either had unlimited fast pass for every single ride, or they would just sometimes take us in the back door of the actual attractions.
Wow.
Through the lot, take us through back door, and you come in right at the actual roller coaster cart to get in it from the opposite side.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not even for the side to line on, you come in from the exit side and get in. So for them, this is just what their normal is. So I think that skews their perception and it skews the level of appreciation for it. Just like anything, right? So our goal as parents, a lot of times, we want our children to have it better than we had it.
Yep.
But when we give them these different things that we give them at the same time, they don't have the same level of appreciation we have because they don't know what life is like without it.
Oh, they sure don't, man. It's like a level of entitlement.
Exactly. You
know? But we gave it to them. And it's like, this is what we worked hard to get. And then we give it to them. And it's like, now they're not hungry anymore.
That's it. It's a very slippery slope. And I had this conversation. I'm having all types of these conversations, you know, all the time. So I had this conversation just 2 days ago with a friend of mine. Right. Him and his wife are Indian. And they were sharing, you know, their story. And his wife was born here in the United States. He was born in India. And, you know, he came over and he was just talking about the things that he didn't have or the way he was raised and how different it is for his children and how just their perception of everything is just totally different. But he worked so hard so they could have this life. But at the same time, they don't have the same level of hustle that he had.
Yep.
And the same reason they don't have that level of hustle is because of what he's provided for them. So like, it's a slippery slope. It's a catch 22, definitely. But hey, like I said, this is what we wanted for our kids. We built it for our kids. So it's trying to just navigate inside of the system of giving them things you never had, but still making them hungry enough so that they want to achieve another entirely new level and not just selling for the status quo, which you've already built.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes I sit with my son and I tell him, you know, some of the things that we get to do, it's not really normal, right? Like some of these perks. And I find myself where he'll nod and say, yes, you know, I understand, but I'm not 100% sure that he does understand.
Yeah.
Like, I think in a good way, he might feel like, you know, Dad did it so I could do it. But I'm not 100% sure that that's the way he thinks all the time. You know, how do you approach telling your kids, man, like this is, you know, you hustled for this. This is something different. Like this is not normal to everybody. So you actually have to keep going.
You know, we definitely try to teach them that. We definitely try to show them that. And we also set the bar and the standard high for them as well. Mm-hmm. You know, because all our kids are like extremely smart, man. They do well in school. But, you know, we try to really push for excellence. So, you know, them saying, well, you know, everybody else in the class got that. Well, guess what? You ain't everybody else in the class.
Yeah.
Because if we provided you with this level, then we want you, again, to push it to the next level. For the next generation, for your kids and the kids to come after them, and that is your responsibility. So we may not be having like that heavy of a conversation, but that's where the conversations we have need to lead to. So 10, 15 years down the line, you've advanced the ball another 10 yards and we get that much closer to the end zone.
Yeah.
And it's really just having those conversations about, again, right, about be good, not being good enough, about applying themselves, about educating them, you know, even though – you know, as teens and tweens, like they still don't want to listen. That doesn't make me give up. I'm still encouraging them that, hey, you need to do this. Hey, look at how you want to spend your money. We're not going to do that. Let's do this instead. Let's invest some money. Let's try to, you know, do this. I'm trying to educate them on wealth and wealth creation. Right. And some things they want to do, some things they don't. Some things I make them do anyway. But I just want them, like whether they use the information now or not, I want them to be equipped with it so that when the switch does turn on and they say, you know what, it's time, then they can begin to fall back on all these lessons that dad and mom gave them years ago.
Yeah, I think that's a huge accomplishment when they do come back, right? Where not yeah. even a huge accomplishment, but it feels good. Because that's the same thing I want with my son, where it's like, you know, I want you to go explore, but I don't want you to just do a regular 9-to-5 because you feel you have to do that. Like, use some of my background. And I look at him now and it's like, well, he might not do that. Like, he might become a doctor. But if he ever comes back to me and says, hey, dad, you know, I need $5,000. I want to start a hat trading company. Man, I'll be all over it. You know, I'll jump all over it. Like, yeah, I'll help you out. So how does it feel when your older kids come back and now tell you, hey, you know, I understand now, dad, like, hook me up.
You know, it feels good. I mean, to be honest with you, because there are times, they'll get times in this thing where you like, I don't know if they ever come back. You know what I mean? I don't know if they're going to circle back around for real. Or if they, are they really getting these lessons? Are they getting the things that I'm sharing, I'm teaching, that I'm trying to, you know, invest into them? So it definitely feels good when they come back and they ask. And, you know, my oldest son, he'll come and he was doing some business stuff on the side, right? Building websites and different things on the side. He would come back and say, hey, you know, I got a contract for this. How should I structure this contract or what should I do? And, you know, I could kind of break that down to him. Or, you know, he recently was trying to get a new position. He was kind of asking me about, you know, ways he should do this or ways he should do that. So just the level one thing of the amount of respect somebody has to come to even ask you certain questions and look at you as, okay, this person can provide value and expertise in this area. Then that means, okay, you've been doing something right over the years.
Yeah.
And, you know, they respect your brilliance in that area. So that's just like I said, it definitely makes you feel good. It makes you think, all right, they didn't ignore every single thing. And then you even can see in their life from time to time, some of the things you imparted kind of showing themselves and kind of, you know, appearing in their day to day lives as well.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. Those are the things I look forward to as a dad.
Yep.
I don't know why, man. Like the wedding and all of that, those things are cool. But being able to like be there and help them grow, I think it's something special about that. So thanks for that. So now you help a lot of adults, man. You help a lot of adults make a lot of cash with your traffic, sales, and profit series, right? My son loves this kid named Ryan and online. Have you heard of that kid on YouTube?
I believe I have. Is that the one that does the reviews?
Yeah, man. He was making like $20 million a year or something like that.
Yeah,
like my son loves him. When he told us, hey, you know, I love Ryan. I want to start doing YouTube videos. Everybody was like, oh, you guys want to be like Ryan and you want to make some money. And the first thing we told him was, no, this is actually a thing for him where he could actually learn how to talk to the camera, how to get familiar with it, right? Like how to get familiar with the online world. So with you help people with traffic. What would you tell somebody that wants to start like a YouTube channel for their kids and how they're going to go from zero to maybe 100 in the first views?
Yeah, you know, well, my thing with any type of social, whether it's YouTube or, hey, I want to do, you know, Facebook Lives or build a Facebook group or, you know, whatever it may be, I'll always kind of boil it down to four C's. And those four C's real quick. The first one is content, of course. So you have to be creating compelling, great content or nobody's going to view. Or even if you catch me this one time, I'm not coming back. So how can I create content that directly speaks to whatever that audience is, right? That's watching me or I want to watch. How can I create content that speaks directly to what their need is? If they got a problem or a challenge, how can I help overcome that challenge? If the challenge is not knowing what to buy or not knowing if I'm gonna like this game when I get it, right? I mean, it can be something as simple as that. You know, if you're solving that and people have that question, then they're going to find you, right? I mean, you know, all things considered, you post properly and use right name, title, all that kind of stuff. But if it's great content, they can find you. Then once they find you, they'll share it. They'll put it in other communities of like-minded people, and they can grow. The second C after content is we want to be consistent. So even with, you know, I forgot my child, and I'm creating a platform, and I want them to be the next sensation star influencer, they have to be consistent in what they do. You know, we got a client that just recently built his real estate based YouTube page of 40,000 subscribers. And I said, you know, how did you build like the first 10,000, 20,000? And he had like 1,200 people for years. And then all of a sudden in 1 year, it went from like 1,300 people to like 10,000 to 20,000. Now it's up to 40,000.
What?
And I said, how did you grow that thing so fast? And he said, I got consistent. I went from just posting periodically, you know, every now and then to getting on a schedule where I said, I'm posting every single day. Or if you can't do every single day, you know, maybe you post once a week, but people know every single Wednesday is going to be new content out. Or every Wednesday and Friday, like whatever you can do, do as much as you can do, but whatever you can do, be consistent with it so that people know when to show up, when there'll be new content, and when they should be looking for it.
Oh, before you go to the next one, let's go back to the previous C, the content. When you're dealing with kids, especially kids that are like my son's age, where he's 6 and 7 years old, you don't really know what type of content will lead the masses, I guess, or what will be attractive, right? Like, this is just more like your kid wants to do a YouTube review of anything and you just do it. Is that still considered content if you do it consistently?
Yeah, it would. But part of what I would do is I would try to take the shortcut, and the shortcut would be finding out, right, are there, you know, 5, 6, 7 year old kids out there that are rocking it, which they are, and what are they talking about? Okay. And I'm saying that you got to duplicate or copy them to the T, but if there's certain topics and titles and things where people are already getting eyeballs, right, it may not be a need to go reinvent the wheel and try to just start from scratch. But if we know that, hey, you know, for example, toy reviews are a hot market because people are out searching every day and they're getting views, right, and it's collecting across different videos, different people, then hey, that's already a market that we know their eyeballs, and there's probably money in that market too, so that could be a market we can move directly into. Or if it's not that, maybe say we do some other type of review that's not toy related, but maybe it's something else that's you know, specific to my child. Because the only thing with your kid is you got to make sure it's something they're actually interested in.
Yeah, that's the and that goes back to the content. If they're not interested, they're
exactly
not doing it.
If you got a kid and they ain't interested in the content, you're not going to be consistent.
Yeah, you got to remember that.
Some Joe Jackson type stuff. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah, you got to remember that. Sometimes, like, when we come in it as parents, we look at it as, you know, maybe they could become an influencer where they get these free toys or free events or whatever. They might not care about that. They might just want to create content, period.
Yeah, and kids have short attention spans. I mean, the thing is they can care about it the day you set it up. Will they care about it 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years from now?
Yeah, so you got to find where's that sweet spot where they actually like it, and then kind of like fine tune it for them without killing their dream.
That's totally it. I mean, that totally it, right? So then once they do it and they love it, right, and they can begin to build it, because, you know, it may not be instant. Hey, here's some things to review. Or, hey, here's a trip. Or hey, here, you know, come to this and test this out and see this and meet these people. It may be some time when they got to grind it out just to create enough content to get out, get eyeballs, and start to build audience and influence. Mm-hmm. Like I said, will they love the content they're doing? Will they create good content along with you? Because the more you do it, right, the better it'll get. And can they be consistent in that, like we talked about, so that you know, day in, day out, or however often it's going to be, when people show up, something is there. And what does that look like? I mean, that doesn't mean that every Wednesday I'm sitting my kid down and doing something. Most likely, I probably would just batch a bunch of content. Meaning, all right, if we got a Saturday, let's do this. It's going to be fun. It's going to be amazing. We got these different toys. We're going to bang out as many as we can. And then maybe that one day, maybe we wanted to get 6 videos done, but we got 4 done. Mm-hmm. But now if I'm rolling out something once a week, I got a whole month worth of content.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. It's true. Because with my son, when they started it, you know, they started it with my wife. I didn't think they were going to be consistent. And they started doing it every single week, consistently dropping an episode. And then I started noticing that they were batching the stuff. Like, everywhere we would go, they would make like 2 or 3 videos. But I didn't notice it until later on, where they actually had it on their phones or on a hard drive, and they had like 3 or 4 episodes already done. And it was like, whoa, like, they're serious now. You
That's
know,
it.
So it's crazy because he loves it. So now he's starting to batch it too, which is kind of nuts, man.
Hey, that's totally it. That's totally it.
Yeah. So it's content and consistency. That's the build traffic.
Yep. Those are the two. And then the last two I always talk about is once you get your content, once it's consistent, you want creativity. The creativity is the piece that makes you different, right? What's the piece about, you know, your son, if he's sitting here doing it, that would make him stand out against Ryan or, you know, the other kids. And the great thing about kids, the kids are extremely creative.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where I think a lot of adults, right, we'll go and we'll look. And even if we subconsciously do it, we'll start to emulate things that we've already seen, where kids are so different. And, you know, just from sibling, right, a brother and a sister could be totally different. A brother and a brother totally different. And how they present the same things could just be, you know, two totally different ends of the earth about how it looks, how it feels, what they say, you know, what the reaction will be. So with a child, I really say harness and embrace the creativity that they have, because that can be what makes them stand out from the marketplace. And then the last thing is just culture, because once you bring content, consistency, creativity together, that's the actual culture of the community you start to build. Mm-hmm. And in the end, like, don't forget, like, all this thing, like, the only reason influencers are influencers is because they have community.
Yeah.
So like what makes that group unique, the group of people that come, the fans, the viewers, the subscribers, the followers, whatever it may be, like when you pull those different things together, content, consistent creativity, then you begin to form a real culture for that community that then you can build multiple layers of influence and business on top of that.
Yeah. And it's crazy because I think like you mentioned with the kids, that they're super creative. When they sit there on YouTube, like the kids that they're watching, they're creative also, but they're all just doing silly things. Where it's like they're not rocket scientists, right? Where they're just having some fun. And for some reason, they're building that community behind it. Like, we just can't think like them, right? And there's something special there.
Yeah, and the reason they're building community is because they don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like so many adults that have so much amazing information. They got all these degrees and certifications and all this stuff, but they second guess every single thing they do, right? I can't tell you, it's probably billions of hours of content right now sitting on people's hard drives all across the world. did they create it? Did they meant to release in a course? They meant to release in a training, or they shot it and was going to put it on Facebook or put it on YouTube, but they never got out because they didn't like the way they looked. They didn't like the way they talked. They didn't like the clothes they had on that day. And kids, like, they don't have those filters. So they can be themselves. They can be silly. They can be charismatic, and they can attract other kids and even sometimes, you know, young people and adults to them that are excited about what they offer and what they're sharing with the world.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. That's insane, man, because all of these things are things that you do and you don't even notice that they're happening.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and that's pretty dope. So now after traffic, you go to sales. I think that's almost like that's almost impossible with kids. Like, how many sales avenues are there when you think about like a influencer? Is it just like influencer marketing, ads and things like that?
No, I mean, that's a great question, because one of the things we started out as bloggers, and then we did a lot with agencies, a lot with brands, you know, that wanted to reach our audience of families at the time through our site, our original site, blackandmarriedwithkids.com. So they say we want to reach African-American families, right? They would come to us and we would do sponsored content, articles, social media shares, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever it may be, Periscope, takeovers, all kinds of stuff. And as we did these things, we realized that we were essentially selling our influence. We built this influence. We were selling it to other people, but we weren't using it ourselves. And that's what most social media influencers fail to realize, is that the influence they have is actually more powerful for them than it is for these brands and agencies they sell it to.
Wait a minute. So what you're saying is when somebody signs up for like a Fashion Nova ad deal, what you're saying is that sometimes they might as well not even do the Fashion Nova ad deal because they could sell their own things?
This is what I'm saying. Like, if you sign up for Fashion Nova and you put yourself in a Fashion Nova outfit, you put on your page, and Fashion Nova is making money from it, which they are, they probably wouldn't be paying you to promote it, right?
Yep.
Like, the reason most time that the people are buying it is not because it's a Fashion Nova outfit. They're buying it because they like the way you look in it, the way you rock it, the way you present it to the audience that you've spent time, money, and effort cultivating.
Exactly.
So again, right? So now, and not to say that, hey, you shouldn't do the Fashion Nova piece, but what if you did Fashion Nova sometime, but the majority of the time did your own thing? And then what if instead of you getting paid pennies on a dollar or a fraction, or even if they gave you affiliate or commission piece, and I'm saying we'll give you 10-20% of every sale, what if you made 70-80% of every sale and you gave 10-20% to somebody else?
Yep. Yeah, I get it. I get it. That's like,
that's how the real numbers begin to work, right? Yeah. And that's how you have control, because the part you don't control when you work strictly from an influencer model of other people paying me for access is that would be good, right? But we'd have to show audience, show traffic, show all this engagement. And then, because that's what people are buying, they're buying your metrics. But every month, those metrics start over from scratch. So if it's through your website and it was, you know, through your site, that's cool. But every month you got to show it again that you can get this many readers, this many people to the site. Right. Once you get to do followers now. Right. Followers are not enough because people know you got all them followers. Half of them are not engaged or stagnant. Some of them are fake. Yeah. So they're going to be looking at engagement. I'm like, when you post, how many people are engaging with the content that you're actually posting? Yeah. How many people are commenting? How many people are liking it? How many people are sharing it? And then, like, once you do that one thing and it got shared and it got out there, that's great. But every single time you got to keep reduplicating that and doing it again. Yeah. And in the offices of the brands, the agencies, the influencers, you can have somebody that loves you, but then they leave their job or they get fired. And then it's a new person in, and then that money dries up. Mm. You can have a company or brand or agencies after a certain demographic. They can say, hey, you know what? We want to reach the African-American market. That's a market that's spending, you know, $1 trillion every month. Hey, and we found the perfect person for it. But then the next quarter, they come and say, you know what? When the Latino market is growing leaps and bounds, we want to redirect our funds and money over there. And then guess what? You're out.
Yeah, you're gone.
Or they can say, hey, you know what? We've just totally dismantled. And all this stuff is real stuff I've seen happen. We've just totally dismantled our multicultural division. So now we want everything to be general market. When everything is general market, that means everybody, for the most part, just a minority, gets squeezed all the way out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it, man, because that, you know, I show my son some of the deals that people send me for like influencer marketing stuff. Yes. And I always joke around with him and I tell him, you know, I'm gonna trash this email. He'll be like, nah, dad, you know, that's a quick $300-$400. And I'm like, yeah, but that's I'm selling myself out. Right. Like I'm selling myself to them while I'm trying to build a business. I can't be on the same field as everybody else fighting them for these same little contracts when I'm trying to build a business that I want to leave here. Like I want to leave a legacy. It's not going to happen by me grabbing these one-off deals.
Exactly. And that's the entire thing I think a lot of influencers don't get is that, hey, you know, you look at that $300 deal and look at this, hey, it's like this easy money I could take. But what if, and like I said, not again to say don't take it. Like we still do influencer jobs. Mm. It's just before, like that was 70-80% of our income and 20% came from other sources. Now it's 20% of our income and 80% comes from us selling our own products and services to our own audience. And what does that do, right? When we do that, that A, allows us to serve that audience better. Because what we quickly found is that the more we tried to appease the brands and agencies, we started shifting our content a little bit and making content that would get us more contracts with brands and agencies, more sponsored content, more opportunities and things like that, because we knew what they wanted to see. So we started to make more content that they wanted to see in order to serve our audience to get paid for it. Once we change the model to we're creating products and services that solve the problem of our audience, that made us get more in tune with what the people coming to us wanted. Mm-hmm. That made us pay more attention to what the challenges and problems and pain points in their lives were. And we had to get serious and focused because we said if we don't serve these people well enough, we won't be able to build a business. So it took this like our level of sensitivity to our audience up to new heights. They appreciated it, then allowed us to create products and services to help overcome those challenges they faced. And then we were able to monetize it to a much higher degree than anything we had done doing just the influencer side of it by itself.
Mm-hmm. And that led to real profits right there.
Yeah. And control. Because, again, before we didn't control the money, like at any time somebody could call up and say, you know what, we've changed directions. We're going for another demographic, another market, another site, another person, another, you know, change of strategy that we may have done. We had no control over what would happen from quarter to quarter. Now we have all the control. Because not only do we have products and services, we have a customer list. So guess what? Those people that bought from us once will buy from us again. All we have to do is make sure we provide stellar customer service, go back, return, present them with something else that solves another problem, another challenge they may have or on a deeper level, and they'll come back and buy again and again and again and again. And that's an opportunity we don't have when all we do is cater to brands.
Yeah, that's true. Love it. Love it. So wait, so now all of that leads to profit. And I guess the hardest thing for me, I mean, you know me for a few years now, is always the profit side. I hate charging for things. How do you profit when you're, or how do you teach your kids about profiting when they're trying to be like an influencer or even when you're trying to be an influencer yourself without feeling like you're pimping yourself out or your child? Because I know dads, you know, sometimes they don't want to post things about their kids because of that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's, again, right, about you've been able to really set this up and not just say, all right, you know, I want my children, I want my family to be influencers. But I think it's about just a slight mindset shift to say, I want my family to own a business. Mm-hmm. And the way we monetize this business is through an influencer model, right? Because a lot of influencers, again, right, what they say is, all right, I want to work with agency brand A, B, C, and D. They look at it and say, okay, I want this brand to give me this, to do that, and to do these other things. But what I would always tell people whenever I spoke at blogger conferences, we begin to move out of the blog space, influence space, into more of a real business, is too many people are fixated on what can I get for free.
Yeah.
And by making a slight mindset shift, my thing is, I don't want to get anything for free anymore. And I take free stuff, right? That ain't what I'm saying. I'm saying I don't want to – my goal is not to get free stuff. Mm-hmm. My goal is to make an amount of money where I can buy whatever I want and cost not be an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a slight mindset. Because both ways, right, you're working towards a goal. But the work I want to put in is not for me to work because, ooh, I got something free, because nothing's free in life. Mm-hmm. Because when I got it for free, I've taken that trip and they wind and dined me. But guess what? Now the whole night I got to take Insta stories. I got to take pictures. I got to talk about the whole thing, right? When I could just want to chill and enjoy the moment and do what I want to do. So it's really about just, again, like approaching it as a business, not just, hey, I want to do this influence thing for fun, but how can we structure it as a business? So if it takes off, we're already set in position to succeed. And when we talk to our kids, talking to them about the difference, right, of being, have my kids sit down and go through a course for children, right? And I love it. Talk about the difference about being consumers versus producers and how most people just consume, right? They consume content, they consume products, they consume services, but they don't produce anything. Mm-hmm. And the people that produce are the people that amass riches and wealth. So how can we begin to have those talks with our kids? We can instill that in them at an early age so that they can begin to make that mindset shift. And as they grow, even if they stray away, they'll come back and always remember those things you taught them. And that profit piece will be instrumental because they'll say, hey, not only am I doing this just to do it, but at the end of the day, I'm doing it because I want a return on my investment, the time investment, the sweat equity investment, the financial investment. I need a return on what I've done. And when they look out for that return, right, most of the time they'll lead towards the right way and make sure they're not doing things just to do them, but doing them for an actual financial benefit at the end.
Yeah, no, and I remember one time when we did, I think we did A3C together in Atlanta.
Yep.
And you said that. You said, you know, James, I don't do conferences unless I can figure out what's my return on investment. Like, the exposure isn't enough.
Exactly. Right. And that's another thing. I mean, that's one of those big influencer things where people say, hey, we'll work, we'll do this, we'll do that. It'll gain you exposure. And exposure is cool, but I have to be able to flip that exposure into some type of return.
Yeah.
And like I said, a lot of times, like, we just aren't focused enough on that part of the conversation. It has to get beyond, you know, stuff just being cool or me being, you know, impressed or blown away because I got the chance to do this. How can I make sure I get some type of return on that investment? Because everything has a cost.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. I think when we first met, the tech startup scene was all about community first, you know, build your app to millions of people, forget about profit. I think it was kind of detrimental to our society a little bit. But I also feel that now it's coming back where people are saying, you know what, like, I need a profit because if not, I can't live. And
exactly.
And that's basically it. So you're not, you know, I guess for the pimping out question is more like you're not pimping yourself out if you're doing things that don't return anything to you, you know, on your investment, like you said. So it's like, yeah, you know, stop doing like the 80% fashion over deals and instead only do 20% and work on your business.
Because the thing is, when you begin to build your own business, mm-hmm. you have more control about what you take and don't take anyway then. Because, like, let's not get it twisted. Like, everybody has mouths to feed. They got to put, you know, clothes on somebody's back. They got to, you know, feed the kids. They got to do whatever it is. But when that's your whole cycle, when all your money comes from that part, there are going to be some times when you do some stuff that otherwise you wouldn't do.
Yeah.
When you take some contracts or, you know, take some opportunities where otherwise you're really not interested in that thing, but you need that extra 500, that 300, that 1,000, 3,000, 30,000, whatever it may be, because you need to make ends meet. But again, and when you build that audience, that community, that influence, you begin to monetize it on your own. Then when the deals come that don't make sense, you can turn them down. Then when the deals come where they're asking for way too much, for way too little, you can turn it down. And it just gives you more control over your own destiny and how you begin to move the ball forward yourself.
Yeah. And you can see it. You can see it even with like the Ryan kid, you know, the videos were out there for fun reviewing things. Sure, a lot of the companies were giving them free things. But then the real money came in when they started creating their own products, their own mystery toys. That's where the real $22 million came from. where it was like, all right, now they flip the switch. Instead of just reviewing things and getting free things, we're producing them.
Exactly.
And it goes back to what you were saying, producers. And, you know, with that being said, I think that's what I want my son to learn when it comes to this whole YouTube game, where it's like you just have to become a producer. You have to create content that you love and that your people love, and then build a community. And then hopefully from there, maybe you profit. Maybe you don't. But you won't get there if you don't produce.
That is it.
Yeah, so any last thoughts, Lamar?
No, I mean, I just encourage people that are listening, man, to, like I said, like just start having those conversations with your kids around business, around entrepreneurship. Even if you're not an entrepreneur, everything you need is in a book. So pick it up. Hey, one of the things I do with my daughters, actually, I try to incentivize them to read more, because they read a lot, right? Mm-hmm. My kids love books, but they love like just fiction and all kinds of stuff like that. So I actually incentivize them by paying them, you know, a few bucks, $5, $10, depending on the size of the book, to actually read other books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cash Flow Quadrant, you know, different things like this to kind of begin to expand their mind now, so that as they move into a young adulthood and adulthood, they just think differently than everybody else.
Yeah. No, I agree, man. Since sixth grade, I've been giving my kid books like that. And it was to give them the lesson in business, but also I could keep up, where it's like, if you're going to write a passage about it or essay about this book, you can't just lie to me because I read it too. You know, so it worked as two things in one.
I love it.
Yeah, man.
I love
it. So how can people reach you, Lamar?
Hey, if you want to reach me, anything entrepreneurship, I have a Facebook group called Traffic, Sales, and Profit with Lamar Tyler. It's a free group. It's the most awesome community online for purpose-driven entrepreneurs. Like I said, just Traffic, Sales, and Profit with Lamar Tyler. And then on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere, I'm just at Lamar Tyler, LamarTyler.
Yeah, yeah. And I love the Facebook group, man. You know I'm always up in there. So thank you for having us there.
Hey, no problem, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so thank you. You know, as I always say, man, your presence never has to be boring. Make your presence felt. Fatherhood is lit. Thank you, Lamar.
All right, thanks a lot, man. Have a great one.